should be either completely overturned or at least absolutely not enforced. And to me, it's just a very simple case of connect the dots or go from point A to point B. If there are not enough emergency shelter beds or appropriate treatment opportunities or affordable housing for people, then you're going to have people sleeping out in the bushes or sleeping out in cars. And I don't think those activities, which are survival activities, should be criminalized.
Councilmember Rotkin has said that police do not pursue homeless people into the bushes for sleeping tickets. Rather, if there is an organized protest, of course they'll give tickets to protesters, and if there are complaints from the population, they will, of course, go to the scene and deal with difficult situations that have come up. And if there are areas that are abused by people who sleep outside, police go to those areas as well. But that the camping ordinance, and particularly the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance, are a useful tool for the police. What's
your
reaction?
Well, let me just to respond to the sense of useful tools. Useful tools it's in the eye of the beholder, and I have seen, as I'm sure you have, that police departments go through regular cycles of calling for more useful tools to attempt to socially control things in the public realm. And the tools of today will be declared useless tomorrow, and a new set of tools will be called for. And it happens time and time again. And the city of Seattle, where I worked for many years on this issue, is a good example of one liberal city that has turned around and proliferated, ordinance after ordinance, trying to micromanage people at the street level for the good of economic interests. And it's just a huge form of harassment of the housed versus the unhoused. So, I feel very strongly about these things, and some people certainly don't agree with my view on them.
Well, listen, could your experience in Seattle, which is a city of, a million people?
Half a million.
Half a million people. Certainly Santa Cruz is one-tenth that amount of people. Santa Cruz is a small town. The police force is a small town. Some city council members, not just Michael Rotkin, but Catherine Byers, I would say, probably also feels this way, that the police have made major modifications in their dealings with the homeless, that they don't harass the homeless, that they are, the number of tickets is way down. What's the problem?
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate any time city or the police departments or city councils can show restraint. And I think that tolerance is what we need. So if people feel that they just absolutely have to have these laws on the books, I think they ought to, at least when it is clearly impossible for people to comply, that they should show incredible levels of restraint in using those laws. I'd like to see where those tickets were hardly ever written, except for extremely flagrant situations where people had been warned repeatedly and that there had been a lot of public complaint. But I don't think we're there right now. I think that especially this summer we saw the use of these tickets quite frequently. And besides, there's other laws. If people are worried about property laws or property damage, there's other ways of addressing it without having to proliferate. These tickets and laws are just much too discretionary in the hands of individual officers out in the community. And I just think it's very easy to deal away the rights of low-income people when it's not an issue that the middle-income or the upper-income feel.
Well, what about a property owner at Harvey West or Mission Street might say, what about the rights of the property owners? You have these homeless people running in, using syringes, leaving dirty needles around that are a hazard to children, old mattresses, human feces, piles of urine, old damaged sleeping bags, just a complete mess. And of course, I've heard from some people in the Harvey West Association that the police don't even come out to camping calls because of this new, quote, liberal city council. Now, is this going to help our community grow to have this kind of problem proliferate?
No, it's all all depends on what you think is going to solve the problem. If you want to solve the problem, and you're talking about a group of people, in the example you just gave, sounds like we're talking about people who have significant substance abuse problems. Let's attack it from the side of substance abuse. Let's make treatment available on demand. Right now, if someone's a heroin addict and they decide they want treatment, or if they're a chronic alcoholic, they want treatment, you're going to have to wait for that treatment. And by the time you get to your point where you might be able to get your state-subsidized treatment, you're probably going to be long gone on your next binge or episode.
Or perhaps just long gone, period.
You've got dead, or you may be dead by the time your bed comes available. So I think it's all in how you want to attack the problem. And unfortunately, people are looking for short, quick, easy solutions. And the easiest and cheapest, they think, tends to be the legal approach. And I often, when I speak about this in the public, remind people that in a lot of ways, what's happening between cities and counties around the country regarding the homeless is sort of a proliferation like the arms race we saw between the U.S. and the USSR. People city officials are saying the next town down the road has this whole package of anti-sitting ordinances, anti-sleeping ordinances, anti-panhandling ordinances, so I've got to get mine, for fear that all these unwashed people are going to come to my community and panhandle and sit on my sidewalks and ruin my tourist industry. So
well, you have to keep up with the Joneses, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. It's a big competition, and fax machines are humming all over the country. Cities, city prosecutors, city attorneys trade ordinances and fax them to each other, and it's a constant, you know, upward escalation of social control. And again, I have great empathy for property owners who have to face, in some cases, you know, damage or dangerous situations. But I'd rather get out and try to work with that property owner to get their property cleaned up. You know, I've often had shopkeepers say, well, what do you expect, Cole? What if somebody came and shit on your doorstep every morning? What would you do? And I say, well, if I owned a shop and somebody defecated on my doorstep, I'd get right out and clean it up. I wouldn't let somebody put graffiti or defecate on my shop front. I wouldn't stand for it. But I wouldn't expect somebody else to come to the rescue. I'd get out there and do my part to clean things up, and I'd start talking to the people. I'd find out, who are these people that shit on my doorstep, and why do they have to? Maybe they have to do that because there's no public restrooms available, or, you know, maybe they need a treatment bed or mental health assistance.
Councilmember Tim Fitzmaurice, who I know has made some recent forays for the Armory and done some kind of unloosing of minor amounts of funds for snacks up there for the, 60 to 100 people who stay there every night as emergency shelter, also had a kind of an interesting point of view on the issue of people sleeping in their vehicles last spring. He said he didn't see why the city should enable or pay for people to use city facilities, to wit, streets, to park their vehicles on and sleep in. He felt that this was something that should first be cleared with residents in the neighborhood, because in essence it was their neighborhood, and here were these interlopers with their vehicles coming in and using it as free housing.
Mm-hmm.
What's your reaction to that?
Well, my reaction, first of all, is that we have to face the fact that because of the god-awful price of housing in, you know, throughout our country, and let alone in a super heated environment like Santa Cruz and Santa Cruz County, we get what we pay for. I mean, if people are really enjoying those high property values, guess what? A lot of other people are going to have to turn around and live in non-traditional housing arrangements, which increasingly are on four wheels. I think we're going to, California is showing the way of the rest of the country. There are going to be huge portions of our population, elderly people, other low-income groups, you know, younger people who can't get employment are going to turn to living in their vehicles, and they're going to put every cent they have into just keeping their vehicle licensed and legal and running. And that's pretty lousy housing policy, but it's a reality. So, again, I think it's a very parochial attitude to try to define your city street as somehow sacred only to residents of your community. I think we have to be less parochial. We have to back up and see the bigger picture. And personally, I'm a citizen of the United States. I am not a citizen of Santa Cruz or Santa Cruz County. I don't define my rights only on the basis of this little bitty turf. You know, I'm a member of a larger group, and if somebody wants to come and sleep in a vehicle on my street, if they're not breaking other laws and causing disturbances, then I think that's their right.
You know, you seem very forthright in your defense of the civil rights of poor people. It's interesting to contrast your position with that of the previous Homeless Services Center Director, Karen Gillette, who actually held that position for 5 or 6 or 7 years before you came. And indeed, she works for the same board that you, that, or you work for the same board that she does. And it's quite a contrast to see you, you know, essentially speaking out quite forthrightly. I take it you oppose the sleeping ban. You sound like you do.
I absolutely. At least I oppose the sleeping ban. I oppose and have fought aggressively in my prior employment against other laws. And like in Seattle, there were a number of panhandling and sitting laws that were enforced. And I think that my primary role is one of education, but I'm passionate about my view, and I don't hesitate to speak out. There are certainly some political situations as the director of a human service organization that I have to respond in a political manner, but I don't hesitate in what I consider our conversation today to be educational. So based on 15 years experience of working closely with homeless people, I don't hesitate to speak out and say I think there's a lot wrong with our country and a lot wrong with our local government's approach to these problems.
Well,
and I'm not looking to embarrass anybody. That's just the way I see it.
Has your board, which includes on it such luminaries as Donna Murillo, Catherine Byers, Judge Yonce, who recently put a $100,000 bail on a man who was essentially a homeless and youth activist. It seems you've got a lot of people on your board who are pretty powerful who may have different views than you do. Have you crossed swords with them? How do you get along with those folks?
Well, I get along with them very well, and I appreciate tremendously the dedication and dollars that they bring to the table. I have probably the best board of directors I've ever worked with in terms of their dedication to trying to make the Homeless Service Center the best organization that it can be at this moment in time. And we certainly, if we sat down and traded philosophies, might have areas of great disagreement. But I see this group of people coming together in an effort. What my board wants to do is make things better. And they are pretty much approaching it from a service standpoint. So they don't see our organization as being an advocacy organization, but they don't seem to mind me speaking out, again, as in an educational manner, and I'm not speaking for my organization. I'm not saying that my organization absolutely thinks we should overturn the sleeping ban. If I took that to my board of directors, I don't know what kind of a position they would take.
Oh, I think I know what kind of
position. I'm not going to predict it. But I also don't see the need to put them, you know, in that spot at this time. I mean, I think the organization is a service organization first. And we have fine advocacy organizations like Huff to go out and articulate some of the civil rights issues.
You actually were at the December 14th City Council meeting when your Homeless Issues Task Force brought to that City Council in somewhat disarray, I might add, because apparently it's some kind of internal problems within the Homeless Issues Task Force. But certainly it was a unanimous recommendation a week before that you yourself authored in the main, and that essentially stated that the sleeping and camping ordinances should be suspended pending the establishment of safe zones, and that this was an emergency that you wanted to put on the council's agenda immediately. Is that a proper rendition?
I think it's a reasonable rendition. I want to say, in terms of my authorship, that because of my experience and the fact that I've worked on many groups like this, I often play the role of trying to help the group articulate a position. And so I don't have a great deal of ownership of these various positions that have been taken. I think it's a group ownership, and I think our power is in the group. And so far, we've been pretty much stymied. I mean, every time that we've passed a motion that has asked the council to take immediate action, it's been in an area of civil rights that they don't want to jump into right now. It's pretty clear that there's not a majority there that wants to get into this.
In fact, so, you met with Mayor Sugar, our new mayor, several days ago, and didn't he in fact read you the Riot Act on this issue and told you to go back to the drawing board in so many words?
Well, I think that the mayor was trying to give us his direction, his view on this, which is that at least he himself does not want to get back into the sleeping ban right now, and he wants us to be more concrete in our proposals and more focused on the services side. And I think we tried to articulate back to him that they created us, and that a group of citizens can't sit down with the problem of homelessness and not look at the whole picture. So, I mean, I think that his approach was pretty abrupt and unyielding, and was certainly not articulated in a style that I found at all my cup of tea. If I was a citizen, I probably would have just walked out of the room. But I was there, again, as an organizational representative, so I was a bit stuck. Anyway, we've got a problem. The problem is the local council does not want to wade into the whole picture. And so the committee is going to have to reconnoiter and decide, you know, what it wants to do at this point, and I will certainly support what the group wants to do.
Now, this Homeless Issues Task Force consists not merely of service providers like yourself, advocates, folks working with health like Christine Sipple, but also homeless people like Tamate and Thomas Levitt.
Mm-hmm.
It also consists of formerly homeless women such as Linda LeMaster, who chairs the group. And you have a business representative, Peter Eberle, who is no less than the director of the Downtown Association,
mm-hmm.
who also voted for your resolution to suspend the sleeping and camping ordinances pending the establishment of safe zones. Maybe he wished he hadn't. I'm not sure. I get different stories from that on different days. It's not too clear to me. But here is this resolution which you unanimously passed on December 6th, and which Mayor Sugar has steadfastly refused to bring up to City Council either on the 14th or at the last meeting on the 4th. I guess there was a special meeting a couple days ago. And apparently it's not really due to arrive on the 11th, except as part of your midterm report, which I understand will be happening in the afternoon at the 3 o'clock session?
That's my understanding.
Now, I know that when I sat in on the Homeless Issues Task Force meeting on December 6th, I was quite heartened by the fact that the task force seemed not only determined to bring up this issue again, the question of the camping ordinance and the criminalization of people at night for sleeping, which really seems to be a key factor in the health and happiness of homeless people, and indeed getting anywhere out of homelessness. I mean, how can you do that effectively if you're awakened at night, or have to be afraid of that, or have to be afraid of beatings? It's always seemed rather clear to me. But you also came together and decided you seemed to be on the verge of taking another step, the step of holding a press conference. I was even thinking that some people, one of whom I think already has, Sherry Connable, resigned in order to dramatize that you cannot operate with your hands tied. You cannot come in and tell the city council what they want to hear if what they want to hear is not helpful in ending the homeless situation. You cannot lie about what is needed here in Santa Cruz. Am I misreading you there?
Well, I think that, again, I can't speak for the group until the group has a chance to gather with the latest information and direction from the mayor. And I think that people are frustrated. The people who feel more passionately about the immediacy of here we are in wintertime, here we are with a lot of people left out of the system, and we're not taking any bold action to make things, you know, immediately better. But I think also that we, you know, we're just going to have to decide what can we do. You know, we could all stand up, or most of us could stand together and resign. I don't expect that will happen. I think if we stay together, I think we need, and we choose to do basically what the mayor is asking us to do, which is to narrow our focus considerably.
What kind of issues is he asking you to look into?
Well, he's wanting concrete proposals that have to do with enhancing or increasing available services, and all those things we're working on. We're working on proposals for a new family shelter. We're working on proposals to expand shelter around the calendar year and keep from having such a huge drop-off after the winter winter resources constrict. And we're going to do that. I mean, that's one of the things we've been working on.
You're referring to the fact that the Armory closes in April, and the number of people that can actually access shelter on an emergency basis drops from 20% of 500 to 1,500 homeless down to 5%, right?
Yeah, I mean, it just drops to a point where we're triaging and getting in only a tiny slice of some of the most needy individuals in our community. We can, as a community, we can do a lot better than what's available in the summertime. But getting back, Robert, to the point of what does the task force do at this point? You know, whatever we do, we have to, you know, if we choose to just do what the council apparently wants us to do right now, we have to at least articulate to the community that we have been narrowed in focus considerably from what I felt our original focus was. Again, all of this is in the eyes of the beholder, but...
Well, now, what's wrong with Mayor Sugar's proposal? I mean, here you come talking about the sleeping ban, and, you know, Catherine Byers, who holds the majority on the city council, has said, ixnay, no changes in the sleeping ban, thank you very much, except perhaps for lowering the fines, which she did to some extent last year, although failed to inform the city attorney of it for 4 months. Now, he's laid down the law. He says, okay, you know, look, go find yourself a family shelter. What's wrong with that?
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with it other than the fact that it's an incomplete picture.
Was it a suggestion that I understand from a previous conversation with you that you felt actually rather upset to hear this proposed to you when it was proposed the way it was by Mayor Sugar several days ago? What made you upset?
Well, my own reaction to it was twofold. One was the style with which the message was delivered, which was very much the sense of being, I don't know what the best analogy is, but, I mean, basically we were being dressed down by a
given
superior.
Given a good spanking, perhaps.
Spanking, a whipping with a wet noodle, you know, pick your metaphor. But it was very much a top-down. He used words like, I am shocked by how you've wasted your time in your first 3.5 months, and I'm surprised, I'm startled, I'm, you know, upset, you're off track.
Did anyone say to him that we're rather shocked and startled that you've been wasting our time when we come up with these resolutions? You've authorized us to look into the situation. We tell you what's needed, and you won't even talk about it or put it on a council agenda or even put it in an agenda packet for the public to know is coming out. Did anybody make those statements?
Many statements were made, not quite in the way you're framing it, but along similar lines that, you know, I think, again, my basic response to it and what I said to the mayor was, our task force has nothing to be defensive about. We have done what any good group, well-meaning group of people would do faced with a task. You know, we're not responsible for all the politics and bad blood and bad feeling on this. It's merely just a part of homelessness. You can't address the problem without also addressing the bigger picture.
The mayor doesn't want to decriminalize, or if he wants to, he just certainly doesn't want to be the front moving force to decriminalize homeless people in this interval when people do not have affordable housing or even shelter, or even the means to shelter themselves. Do you think the community would respond to this if your task force went directly to them?
I really don't know, Robert. I am very discouraged by what's happening in our country and happening in this world. And I'm afraid I would love to go directly to the people, but I think you have to do that also with an effort to educate people, because people react to the issue of homelessness with tremendous stereotypes in mind, extremely negative stereotypes about the people on the street and what their situation really is and what causes it in the first place. So I wouldn't say that if we went directly to the public with this that we would automatically get a more sympathetic response than what we're seeing out of our elected officials. However, it may be the only thing we can do. I think it still has to be done with education. I'm still hopeful that we can educate the newer council members, and I don't think we're going to have immediate success, but I think we've just got to continue to try to educate and push that this is a much bigger and much more complicated picture than people would like to treat it as. I mean, people want quick fixes, and there are no quick fixes here.
Well, you've been working on, you've worked at the Homeless Services Center now for 9 months, is that fair?
Since May, yeah, so it's coming up on 9 months.
And you certainly have had to do with some conservative local residents in the Harvey West who no doubt have met with you at different times.
Oh, absolutely.
And they've come to you with these concerns about needles and homeless people hanging out and people drinking and so forth. What's your sense? Is the community there intractably opposed, let's say, to allowing people to sleep in vehicles in say, designated areas of Harvey West?
No, I think that most people that I experience, when we have time to talk past the stereotypes, get past the superficial level, get past the sort of knee-jerk reactions that people have, I think people can, I find people to be very willing to look at practical alternatives. I do think that people operate very much out of fear. They operate with limited understanding.
Now, you are talking about Harvey West residents. I mean, you're making some general statements that I certainly would applaud, but are you talking about your particular experiences with this community?
Well, I think that Harvey West is a good community, and I think it's one that the residents I've talked to, when I've had the opportunity to get beyond the superficial, have been willing to consider alternative.
I remind you, this is the community that is trying to bring to City Council a proposal to bar parking everywhere in Harvey West,
mm-hmm.
except
again, it's a good example, Robert, of a very simple approach to the problem, which is to try to sweep it out of your neighborhood. And so, sure, I don't think it's conflicting with my view of my neighbors. I think that that's an easy, quick fix that people are interested in.
You think they can be talked around to respecting the rights of homeless people?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Well, I mean, we have a
true idealist. I'm not saying it isn't so. I happen to believe that's true, too.
Yeah. And I think I can tell you, after, the kind of generosity I see from people in the area writing donation checks to my organization, people stopping by with food, people stopping by with clothing, and these are people that also have, negative impacts on some of their businesses because of the concentration of people at our center during business hours. So I think people are, these are not black and white issues, and I think people, again, are pretty pretty willing to stretch a bit, but they need leadership, and I think we are lacking leadership clearly lacking leadership in this city, and people are running scared from this issue, and again, it's just extremely disheartening to see.
You will be meeting with the Homeless Issues Task Force itself next Monday at 5:30?
Next Monday at 5:30 is our next public meeting.
And then on Tuesday, I guess the 11th, there will be a council meeting in the afternoon at which your midterm report will be coming up at 3 o'clock or soon thereafter?
I believe that's the case.
And if folks wanted to talk to you more, is there a number you can be reached at as far as giving people a perspective on homelessness? Have you got
happy
time?
I feel it's part of my job to talk to people and share experiences on this issue and knowledge on this issue. People can reach me at in Santa Cruz at 458-6020.
We've been talking to Ken Cole, Homeless Issues Task Force Vice Chair, Seattle activist, and Santa Cruz Executive Director of the Homeless Services Center. Are there any other hats you wish me to mention?
That's plenty for now, Robert. Thanks.
Hey, thanks a lot, Ken.
Okay.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. That was a recorded interview with Ken Cole, as mentioned before. And it looks like we're getting some reaction. You can always give a call to 427-3772 and join in the gang. We do have one line, so be patient. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. It's Roxanne.
Oh, the ailing Roxanne, the terror of the city council.
Hey, I just listened to your interview with Ken Cole, which was excellent. And you know, one thing that really struck me is that in his almost year on city council and now as mayor, that the one thing that Keith Schuerger learned was how to take a task force or take someone that, you know, a group that has good ideas that they've appointed and make them helpless, make them impotent. And, Catherine did it to our new councilmen immediately. She kept them from following their heart and the things that they wanted to do. And she basically tied their hands behind their back, and she did it so skillfully. And that's all that our new council members have learned, I think.
Can you be a little more specific? I think I know what you're talking about, but tell us in what way Catherine Byers, then mayor, now council member, let's say tied the hands of, I take it you mean Crone, Schuerger, and Fitzmaurice?
Well, simply by putting herself on the committee for the homeless. Mm-hmm. Simply, you know, just even having herself on that.
That the task force to examine the camping ordinance, yeah.
Right, as if she had any interest in it whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And because she was respected by the new council members, so she split the three council members immediately, put herself in that task force, and began immediately undermining, I believe, any good intentions they ever had. And that's what I see Keith Schuerger doing to this task force that they have appointed, is, you know, immediately when they come up with something that is helpful, and it needs to be done. And one thing that I don't understand is that although they keep saying they want everything to relate to services, they don't have the money for it. So really, if this task force came up with all kinds of suggestions that related to services, it would be so far down the road that any of these suggestions could be implemented.
It tends to show, I think, that there's a kind of a cover going on here, which is what I suggested originally with this task force, which I called a task farce, was intended to do, which is to cover for the lack of action last spring around the changes in the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance.
Of course it was meant to do that, but these people, they unfortunately appointed people that have brains.
And hearts, yeah.
And hearts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think you should stop calling these people the task force, because I believe that they are really trying to do something. And I really think that they're actually, you know, being prevented. I mean, I know they're being prevented, and they're being insulted at the same time.
Oh, yeah, they were dressed down. And it's interesting, you mentioned the lack of funding for proposals. Actually, there were a number of specific proposals they did bring to Keith Schuerger and to Catherine Byers some months ago, and again more recently at the two long meetings they had with Schuerger, one on the 12th and one on the 7th, and actually there's a third meeting, as I said, on 2 days ago, which Ken Cole spoke about. And what Schuerger essentially told them was, instead of dealing with the issues that they presented to him and saying, they were essentially saying to Keith Schuerger, look, we keep sending you this stuff, you can't even get it on the agenda, you can't even give us a response, you can't even, and Schuerger would essentially boomerang them and said, go find the budget for it, go find the money for it, you know, we could do something if you get specific enough, but you're just wasting our time.
When I hear Ken Cole saying he wants concrete proposal,
mm-hmm.
That's always the dodge. That has always been his dodge, and all of the council members, is that because look at how many things were brought to them previous. Look at the man who talked about the sleeping compartments.
Mm-hmm.
People came up with all kinds of very creative, very inexpensive
mm-hmm.
proposals for places to sleep, and it was like, well, if you'll bring me like the finances, the concrete facts or whatever, to a man totally incapable of getting information.
It's interesting. It's in a way, it's the Rotkin dodge. Rotkin has always said
it is identically the Rotkin.
Rotkin says, I will consider more shelter if you will bring me the proposal.
Right.
And we said to Rotkin, well, put out a call for specific proposals and you'll get a bunch of them, and he never does.
Yeah.
You know, it is a sort of a roundabout kind of blather, cover your ass kind of rhetoric, which doesn't really go anywhere. And, you know, what he really is saying is, I'm not interested in this issue. I'm not going to do anything unless you lay it all out for me. And Schuerger has also said, I will not consider the sleeping ban, modifying it, you know, ending this basic human rights abuse until you can get me the votes.
And the more despicable the person is, the more out of harmony, the more out of line with what really needs to be done, the more disrespectful they become. We saw that with Scott Kennedy. We've seen it with Mike Rodkin. We've seen it with Hernandez, with all of them. And so merely months after being elected, Keith Sugar became the new Scott Kennedy, using his mouth, his insults on everyone, even though his whole approach was a kinder, you know, more gentle city council where people were really respected, not called names as we had been in the Beach Flat fight and stuff. And he is more than anyone picked up the, you
mantle,
know,
the discredited mantle of Scott Kennedy.
Well, yeah, you know, they both wear the same size robe, and it's kind of like if the shoe fits. I don't know. I don't get it. I mean, I'm really so disappointed, but I have to tell you, I also have not one shred of respect left. And I originally called because at the last city council meeting, I made a point, but other people made it over and over again about how excited the city council gets about problems outside our area, such as the World Trade Organization.
Normal Miyabu Jamal.
Yeah, they just get, you know.
Not that these aren't important issues, but they're not.
And that's not what I'm saying. I mean, I know that they're important, but our city council can take a stand, boom, in 1 minute on something like that, you know, and come up with some kind of a proclamation, a ruling, by the next meeting and stuff. They have no problem with it. However, the really serious things that need solving in our community, they're just not really very interested in. The people that come before them aren't dressed nicely. The point was made over and over again that unless a person looks a certain way, the city council treats them disrespectfully. And that is very, very true, as we've seen. But recently, at the last meeting we were at, some families came, and they were very nice families, well-dressed families, from the Seabright area, the Branson 40 area, actually Keith Sugar's neighborhood, and asked for protection because drug dealers were coming from the beach area through their park, and children were being accosted, women were being accosted, property was being stolen in their neighborhood. And within 2 days of that meeting, the park was being cleared. The path up to the park was being cleared. It is pristine. I mean, less than 2 weeks later, it is absolutely pristine.
Certain groups of people get fast action.
They get fast results. Now, you know, the Beach Flats has been fighting for the same kind of help for how many years? And, you
decades.
Know, gets very little support. And so I just think that until we start electing people that don't drive Jaguars, that don't have well-paying professions, people who really understand what it's like to live in Santa Cruz, I don't know if we can beat this. I mean, I don't see any improvement, not one iota of improvement.
You know, I think that's really an important perception. I mean, I could point to some tiny things like the Crone-Crapper Commission. Christopher Crone's task force on bathrooms has given us some porta potties downtown, and I suppose that's an improvement. I can say that the tide lands were saved from seizure by the Seaside Company, and I suppose that's an improvement. But as I look for other things, I have trouble finding concrete examples of progress by the city council. And, you know, one hears this, oh, well, we don't have the votes until election 2000. This is Sugar's refrain that he constantly used with Ken Cole and the others.
Well, we've already been through that with Catherine Byers. We know that that's just a tried-and-true dodge.
Right, well, because when Byers got the votes, she changed her spots and went the other way.
Right.
On the sleeping bench. She kept saying with Celia Scott when she was in the minority, if I only had the votes. And then, of course, when she got the votes, she went around, as you pointed out, sabotaging the front that the other folks could have held together and as a unified force to get this, to really take this community over, you know, somewhat difficult terrain for some
and
people. It's
I'm
really
sorry,
difficult.
Robert, but do we in fact have the tidelands?
You know, it's a good question.
I don't think we do yet. I don't think that even that has been won for us.
Well, I know that they turned back the Barrisoni's opinion. I think that they it's still being fought in court, actually. I think you're right. I was going to have, I'm probably going to call Fred Geiger to talk on the show. He was going to discuss the rise of parking lots and how we, you know, we're getting one new parking lot after another. Thank you very much. I think I'm going to ask him to, as usual, I run out of time toward the end of the show, ask him to talk about it briefly and then come back on Sunday. But what I really want to draw you forward with, Roxanne, on Sunday, if you're around and if you're well, because you don't sound too good, sounds like the flu to me.
I've got the flu.
Is Dolphin Lee, because I think, you know, while the sleeping band continues to make thousands, if you consider the county, thousands of people suffer at night, you're not taking away shelter from people who currently have it, but that's what the plan of the buyer's majority on the city council
right.
seems to be with Dolphin Lee. And there's a very interesting speech made by Phil Baer at the city council, and I guess I think Scott Graham is going to talk about Mercy Housing and some of the implications of its proposal, because it seems to be a Mercy Housing buyers-based liberal crowd pleaser, this affordable housing project that they're talking about at Dolphin Lee. But I can't, again, we have about 14 minutes left in the show.
Oh, well, I'll let you go then. Hey, Robert, this is Sunday when?
Say that again? Sunday at 11 o'clock from 11 to 1:30 in the afternoon, we return with the show. It's 2.5 hours on Sunday.
Oh, okay.
And so call in, and of course at other times, if you call 423-HUFF, we'll be happy to talk to you.
Okay, well, I'll let you get to Fred then.
Hey, thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
And we have open lines at Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM, and open lines and open minds, too, we hope. Let's take a little music and get our next guest on the line.
In the morning we built the city.
In the afternoon walked through its streets.
Evening saw us leaving. We wandered through our days as if they would never end. All of us imagined we had endless time to spend. We hardly saw the crossroads and small attention gave to landmarks on the journey from the cradle to the grave. Cradle to the grave, cradle to the grave.
Did you learn to dream in the morning?
Abandon dreams in the afternoon.
Wait without hope in the evening.
Did you stand there in the traces and let them feed your lies? Did you trail along behind them wearing blinkers on your eyes? Did you kiss the foot that kicked you? Did you thank them for their scorn? Did you ask for their forgiveness for the act of being born? Act of being born, act of being born. Did you alter the face of the city?
Make any change in the world you found?
Or did you observe all the warnings? Did you read the trespass notices? Did you keep off the grass? Did you shuffle off the pavement just to let your betters pass? Did you learn to keep your mouth shut? We are seen and never heard. Did you learn to be obedient and jump to at a word? Jump to at a word? Jump to at a word?
Did you ever demand any answer?
The who and the what and the reason why?
Did you ever question the setup?
Did you stand aside and let them choose while you took second best? Did you let them skim the cream off and then give to you the rest? Did you settle for the shoddy and did you think it right to let them rob you right and left and never make a fight? Never make a fight, never make a fight. What did you learn in the morning?
How much did you know in the afternoon?
Were you content in the evening? Did they teach you how to question when you were at the school? Did the factory help you grow? Were you the maker or the tool? Did the place where you were living enrich your life? And then did you reach some understanding of all your fellow men, all your fellow men, all your fellow men?
Sugar supporter, but nonetheless, occasional good guy. How are you doing there, Fred? I hope so. You know, I thought of you the other day when I drove by the construction site next to Denny's, where there were a bunch of Hispanic laborers picketing. Can you tell us anything about that action?
Substandard wages, can you believe?
I think we just got you on mic there. Sorry, we were blank. So I asked you about the picketing out next to Denny's, and substandard wages. Carpenters Union is doing some response. What has been the union record of this city council for the last year? How would you compare it with, let's say, the council before?
I don't think they've got a record yet, Robert, as far as any construction projects of the city.
Well, once they have some convictions, maybe they'll get a record.
Oh, well, maybe some of the contractors that have worked for the city in the past will get convictions.
Oh.
Maybe that will help the record of the city's contracting.
Well, we know that the police department has quite a record of bizarre contractors. Anything new around that issue?
Well,
their $13 million police station.
Yeah, I guess they finally sort of got the building done, and the cops have moved in, and they're wrangling over who's going to make the building right now. And it's another unfortunate situation where the city didn't really do their homework before they hired a contractor, and now they're haggling and going to spend a bunch of money maybe on lawyers and getting less than a sufficient job for the taxpayers' money.
Roxana Kistapache asked us a question a moment ago. She's a Beach Flats activist concerned about the Dolphin League giveaway coming up. But the question she asked was regarding the tidelands. Have the tidelands been secured from the Seaside Company, or is that still up for grabs?
That attorney hasn't made his final report, but I understand from the scuttlebutt I've heard that he's fairly optimistic that the city does have a legitimate claim and is going to encourage us to, in opposition to John Barisoni's original legal advice, not just settle for whatever it was that we were offered originally, but press for at least a better deal than what we were attempted to, or actually the old council majority did vote for, actually, to accept.
So is there some deadline on that? Are we waiting for some court's decision? Or
no, it's just all this is an opinion from an attorney who specializes in that sort of issues that's going to come back and give the final report to the council on how he sees the issue, and then they'll have to decide whether they want to authorize to go to court or start negotiating with the Seaside Company or whatever they want to do for the future of that issue.
We were going to talk, and I want you to get into it extensively when we return on Sunday, if we can find you at home. I know you wait patiently, and then we give you 7 minutes at the end of the hour.
Okay.
You're going to talk about the proliferation of parking structure behemoths, and to me, it looks like the gutting of your plans to, or the failure to flower of the transportation plans of your distant parking lot ideas, which we talked about a year ago on Free Radio.
Yeah, well, it hasn't happened yet, although there is some pressure, I think, from the developers down at the Cathcart and Pacific lot. We're hoping that the city would waive their parking requirements and build them a parking structure. And personally, I think that building more parking structures in the center of downtown is not a really brilliant idea. I mean, obviously, it's going to just encourage more traffic to come into the center of town, and it seems like the opposite direction that we should be sending the cars. I think there are alternatives to that, such as remote parking and park and rides and things like that. And I'm hoping that the transportation study that's going to be undertaken by the consultants soon will focus on some of those types of solutions rather than just bringing more congestion into the center of the city.
And hopefully we can talk about some of the parking lot fiascos in detail. I know that we're concerned, some of us here in Huff, that is me, myself, I, and the other few people that sometimes gather, about anti-homeless architecture, as we describe it, in these parking structures, a sort of a, theoretically, these parking structures could be the basis for car parks at night when the structures aren't being used. People could roll in there, park in their vehicles, women with families in their vehicles, and I guess Arne Levine proposed this as long ago as, 10 years, 15
pretty,
years ago.
Pretty radical idea, I guess.
Levine was, of course, a conservative.
Yeah.
The Progressive Council didn't want to hear about it. That was under Rotkin and Jane Weed and all those great Marty Wormhout-type liberals. And we have the same, unfortunately, this seems to be the consensus the folks have been calling in. There's the same thing under Sugar and Crone, who not only have let themselves be led down the garden path by buyers on homeless rights, and essentially scuttle any homeless rights activity, but don't seem to be doing too much in other fields either. Maybe you can give us some hope.
I would predict, and this is just a prediction on my part, but I would predict that before the end of the Armory operation, that the new council majority will have put on the agenda and dealt with some proposals for at least some minimal degree of, you know, alleviating the situation that will happen when the armories close and there's still homeless people having nowhere to go. And I don't know exactly what those measures will be, but the one you just mentioned sounds like a reasonable one to me. Some car camping allowed in the parking.
And is this just sort of out of the blue, or have you talked to Sugar Crone about any of this?
Well, I've been talking ideas up, and other people I know have been talking ideas up, and I just think that at least Keith and Christopher and probably Tim are, you know, realizing that something does need to happen, and it should happen before the armory's closed.
Well, my point has always been that because these three have only three votes, they need to take their case to the public and not sit around hoping that they can tease a smile on the face of Catherine Byers, or, you know, get a smirk off of Mike Rotkin, or who knows, you know, bag something from Michael Hernandez, you know, or maybe an extra parking fine from Cynthia Matthews. I think what they need to do is go to the community and raise awareness of the issue and get some strong pressure that helps them, because, you know, they are the council that was elected in November.
Right.
But because they refuse to do this and have persistently refused to do this, and I really see no hope for them to do this, because I think that if they had been willing to do it, the winter would have been the time. I don't see them changing. I really feel myself wondering, you know, is this sort of sheer hope you're giving, or is there some substance?
No, I really think that they want, well, you know, as you know, Christopher and Keith both voted at the beginning of their term a year ago to make some changes.
Get real tired of hearing that one vote.
Yeah,
they've done nothing
well,
since.
Anyway, I think the whole time they have wanted to make some changes, and I'm thinking that maybe now they feel like if they make some incremental changes that they can get enough support to have it actually pass the council.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just optimistic that that's going to happen. I'm going to push forward, and like you said, I hope if it does come up on the agenda, that people from the community will come out and make themselves heard and support the idea of doing something before the shelters are closed and then people are out in the street and we're back where we were, you know.
I'm urging people to, of course, call City Council tonight at 420-5020 and tell Sugar to get his ass in gear and pay some attention to the unanimous vote of his $10,000 homeless issues task force and put on the agenda suspending the sleeping and camping ordinances until safe zones are set up. And if in the context of that debate it's defeated, then he can propose as a second alternative the proposal you have.
Mm-hmm.
But unless you get the debate going, you're going to go nowhere. I think that's really clear. And it also, unfortunately, seems to me really clear that he doesn't want to go anywhere unless this community stands up and makes him go somewhere. I'm going to try to get back to you on Sunday. And again, my apologies. We've been talking to activist Fred Geiger, who knows much more than I do. I probably on 90% of the issues in the community marketplace, although
I got you going there, huh, Robert?
You certainly did. And I want to thank you for being on the air, Fred. Maybe we can get you back again on Sunday.
Sure, Robert. And hang in there.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Take care.
Bye-bye. And that's it for Bathrob Spears Broadsides. We're going to go out on a final tune, and the tune will be interrupted by the vicious assault of Earth First and the evil Uncle Dennis, who is going to attack
evil.
You. Evil. And evil.
It's the corporations and the government tree butchers who are evil, Robert.
See what I mean? He's constantly making these claims. We'll see. Stay with us with your pad and paper to see if this man, in fact, has any substance. And rejoin us with Bathrob Spears Broadsides Sunday. This is Thursday at 11 o'clock, and we will be back in the morning, and hopefully you will, too.
Learn to distinguish the hollow man from the rest. At spotting the phonies, we have passed our test. Their objectivity's all a bluff. Their ethical standards, shoddy stuff. Their world's not good enough for us. We don't want to live like that. We've learned that we're free to learn and think and know, providing we don't disturb the status quo. Serve the truth that serves the nation. Guarantee your graduation. Then you can fool the next generation. We don't want to live like that. We've learned that a man in some things may be wise, and yet we're social blinkers on his eyes. Top man in a scientific team, and the sound of burning children screaming doesn't disturb his self-esteem. We don't want to live like that. We've learned to beware of the smiler with a knife, who offers to geld you, cut you off from life. He offers a world without collision, a cozy world of complete submission, never a need for real decision. We don't want to live like that. We've learned how to question everything we've been told by learned men who have been bought and sold. Their detachment's only a damned excuse to sit back on their ass and be no use, while the neck of the world's fitted for the noose. We don't want to live like that.
All right, and we're into the big shuffle here. where